Long are the days since we knew the dark home, Mother sang softly to one of the rhythms of remembrance. The last legion, that was our name then. The warriors who had been set to fight in the farthest plains. This place that had once been a nation and was now rubble. Dead was the freedom of most people. The forms, unknown, were forced upon us. Forms of power, yes, but also forms of obedience. The gods commanded, and we did obey always. Always.
Heroes of presents Stormpod, a Stormlight Archive podcast. Book 2, Words of Radiance.
This is just a quick spoiler warning for I-4, Interlude 4. We were supposed to record I-3 and I-4 together, but I-3 was so long, that Risen chapter was so long, that I just didn't want the episode to be longer than 2 hours. So we decided to clip it, and we are going to release them both in the same week. So that's great for you guys. If you are listening to this and you haven't read I-4 yet, Last Legion, please go back and read it and make sure you're all cut up, because we don't want to be spoiling you at any point in this this journey of ours. If you are all caught up and exactly where you're supposed to be, enjoy the episode. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sean Q, and, you know, I just discovered Stormform, and he's going to take all the glory for himself. It's Jack. What's up, man?
How you doing?
Good. I'm pissed, man. I did all the hard work. I discovered it. I'm the one who had put up all the time and, you know, doing all the research, going through all the notes, and then you're just going to go and steal Stormform from me.
I'm just going to reach out and grab it.
So, interlude I-4, Last Legion. This interlude is sort of just another expansion on the last one that we had with Esh and I, which is just like learning a little bit more about the culture, learning more, a little bit more information about all these different forms and what that means to like live in this society. It's actually really neat.
Well, it starts off with a question. So what kind of spren is it? Thude is asking in the rhythm of curiosity.
Right.
And Esh and I replies, storm spren. So my sister says.
I like this because, like, you know, Esh and I's sister Venli has made this discovery, and then there's this really important decision that has to happen later on. What do we accept this form? And Esh and I goes to her friends. She goes and hangs out with her buddies.
Yeah.
You know, she goes to hang out with Thude and Bila, and she's like, what do you guys think? Like, you know, like it's, that's why they're like looking at the gen, like Thude's looking inside it, and he can see the spren trapped in it. It says he held up the gemstone, peering at the smoky creature moving about inside.
Yeah, that's really cool. Now, they're a war pair, correct?
Yes, Bila and Thude, yeah.
Okay, so that's also very, very cool.
Yeah, because remember last interlude chapter we had Venli and her once mate were, Venli refers to them as research pair. Not war pair, but they go to battle with research together.
right. Esh and I guess in contrast, so they were dressed very simply and she was dressed in her uniform. This kind of made me think of Dalinar.
Right.
How,
like,
he's
ever ready?
Always in uniform.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, just ever ready. It's this tight red cloth that stretched over her natural armor and a cap on her skull plate. She never spoke of how that uniform imprisoned her.
Right.
Felt like manacles that tied her in place. So unlike Dalinar, that's
more like Kaladin, right? Like feeling like
that's
maybe the
like
jacket
Kaladin,
doesn't fit properly because he's not really, you know, like.
Well, squirming in her skin, I think, is a big component of Esh and I so far.
Of course, yeah, for sure. There's definitely a lot of that, right? Because we get that a little later here, whenever she goes to see her mom, that she's like, she's literally just a person who wants to go and travel and like make maps and discover new rivers and new areas. She's an explorer at heart, right? And being forced to be a leader and Command is like, this is not me. Like, I got wanderlust. I just want to go.
This is really cool. Up next here, Bila makes an observation when she's presented with this storm spren. So she says, a storm spren to the rhythm of skepticism. Will it help me kill humans? Because otherwise, I don't see why I should care.
Right. She's in war form, right?
She's in war form.
Yeah.
So Eshonai says, this could change the world, Bila. If Venli is right, and she can bond with this spren and come out with anything other than dull form,
right?
Well, at the very least, we will have an entirely new form to choose. At the greatest, we will have power to control the storms and tap their energy. So she will try this personally, Thude asks, to the rhythm of the winds, the rhythm that they used to judge when a high storm was near. I really like that too.
Yeah. Because they're not talking about an actual high storm here. They're talking about the like a metaphorical high storm that's about to hit when they go to see the five.
Right.
Yeah, it's really neat.
That's great, Bila says, but will it help me kill humans?
Yeah.
Eshonai attunes to mourning. If storm form is truly one of the ancient powers, Bila, then yes, it will help you kill humans, many of them. Good enough for me, Bila says. Why are you so worried? I just think how sort of...
Yeah, that's good enough for me.
One track she is on that. Good enough for... Oh, kill humans? Perfect. I'm in.
This is a good example of what Eshonai has kind of already explained to us with when you take a form, your personality tends to change a little bit. And like Bila might not have been so matter of fact before. She might have been more thoughtful, but then she's like, can I kill? Mm. Yeah. Okay, great.
But now.
Done.
Yeah. Done. Kill? Yeah. Great. Humans? Done.
And kill? Good.
The ancient powers are said to have come from our gods. Who cares? If the gods would help us kill those armies out there, then I'd swear to them right now. Don't say that, Bila, Eshonai says. Never see anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's, I really like that she just lays it out.
It really shows the weight of what they, it says it later on, we'll find it in the later on, that some of there's a segment of the people, of the listeners, who don't really know the old songs and are like, yeah, bring the old gods on. We don't give a fuck. We want to kill humans. They're more concerned with the war with the Alethi than they are with their past and what happened with their gods.
I think what it shows is where some of them are at with regards to the war.
Right.
So even though they might have had this this inner sort of struggle or, you know, need to get away from their gods, like literally abandoning them, wanting nothing to do with them anymore, fearing them really. And now to the point where, you know, Bila, and I'm sure she's not alone. She's willing to, like, you know what, if this is going to help us and if it brings the gods back, or if I have to admonish or worship them again, then so be it.
Right.
So it just sort of shows a divide, I guess, between these listeners.
Right. Exactly. And that's cool. There's a little bit of strife within them, just like we know there's strife within the other side, the Alethi, too. Right.
Sure.
And I'm sure that this tribe of listeners are growing disillusioned with this war effort. Right? They're like, we've been fighting this war for 6 years. I think Eshonai says that a little later. We'll get to it. She says that they assumed that the Alethi would grow tired of a prolonged war on these plains. But then they discovered gem hearts, and then that changed everything. Right.
The greed is...
Right. Yeah. So because of that greed, it made the Alethi even more interested in this war, which is against what their plan was. So like they're like, fuck, man, we've been out here fighting for 6 years and we're slowly dying. You know, that like that slow, long vigil idea from before.
Right. And their numbers are continually dwindling.
Yes.
So they are seeing the end coming.
Right.
That's the thing.
So listeners like
coming.
Bila and Thude are just like, whatever will help end this war, whatever helps me kill humans, I'm in for. Even if it means bringing the old gods back.
Even if it means.
Right.
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 So he kind of pipes in here. So Eshonai meets Bila's eyes, and she starts humming to resolve. And he says, "Food? Is that your answer to every disagreement?" Eshonai asks. "It's hard to argue with your mouth full," which I underlined especially in this bit, because that's my favorite line of this chapter. It's hard to argue with your mouth full. And honestly, there is great wisdom, I find, in that, okay, we're arguing, diplomacy, things aren't going well, we're on different sides of the, you know, political aisle or whatever.
Yeah.
Let's eat.
Yeah. I mean,
get some stew.
Anthony Bourdain would have been would have loved this, right? Like he thought that people.
Well, The Rock would.
There you go.
You want some stew? Hey, you know, sick.
That's a really
hair.
Great. That's actually a great Stormlight Archive example right there, Jack. Because you know the men were swayed by food, right? They didn't want to believe what Callan was trying to preach them, but food helped.
Food really sort of. I don't know what the words would be. I guess sort of. It unites them. Because we all have to eat.
Oh, maybe they're talking about the peas and mashed potato. Unite them. Like, mix them
maybe
together.
Unite them is like, look, we need you to change the menu, guys. Change the menu. Unite them.
Maybe the Almighty wants someone to come up with a shepherd's pie. Unite them. Mashed potato, meat, corn. Unite them.
Unite them.
Please.
With food.
I would.
With
that's canon food. Now. That's hit my head canon. Unite them means shepherd's pie.
So Bila responds to this thing. It's hard to argue with your mouth full. She says, I'm sure I've seen you do just that many times.
Yeah.
Thude says, the arguments end happy, though, because everyone is full. So food?
Yeah.
Fine, Bila says. I just love that that little exchange.
Yeah, it's true, too. Everyone's full, so everyone's happy.
I think it goes back to Eshenai's point of view. She sits down at the table. She's feeling drained. But she comments here, or in her internal... commentary. It was a horrid uniform.
Yeah, here we go again with the uniform.
You know? Like, just again, she keeps commenting on it. Like, she's not comfortable in it.
Yeah.
She picks up a gemstone, stares into its depths. It's a large one, about the size of her fist, though gemstones didn't have to be large to trap a spren inside.
Right. Pretty cool, right?
I like that.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She hated trapping them, though.
She hated them. She absolutely
the right
hated
way
them.
To go was with a high storm with the proper attitude, singing the proper song to attract the proper spren. You bonded it in the fury of the raging storm and were reborn with a new body. People had been doing this from the arrival of the first winds.
Right.
I like that from the arrival of the first winds too. I underline that. That's interesting to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's in keeping with your wind theme. So let's think of it and talk it out here, because Venli wants to take this gemstone with this storm spren inside out to a high storm,
right?
And then
sing a proper,
to bond it, right?
To bond with it, yeah.
And what Eshenai is telling us here is that's not how it was done before. How it was done before, you would go out with positivity,
with the proper attitude.
Yeah, positivity in your heart. You know what I mean? Like, out in the high storm, and you would sing the right song that coincided with the spren, and then if
with
a spren thought you worthy or whatever, it would, choose you, and you would bond it, and then you'd find a form, right? So, there's a difference between allowing the spren to choose you and you forcing the spren in this gem to do as you want.
Right.
You know?
Right. It reminds me of the bond in between the... now I can't remember the name of them. In Avatar, when they're bonding with their with the animals on Pandora.
Yeah.
It's just you can force somebody to do something.
Right. Well, it's like when he ends up having that gigantic winged creature choose him. Right?
Right.
He became worthy of its loyalty and stuff. But I think that
this is really cool.
The really important part of this, I think, is that they learned how to capture spren from humans.
Well, that's what my next point was going to be.
Right. So,
the listeners had learned that capturing spren was possible from the humans. Then they had figured out the process on their own. A captive spren made the transformation much more reliable. Before, there had always been an element of chance.
Yeah.
You could go into a storm wanting to become a soldier and come out a mate instead. So this is really neat that it's so transformative, not only for the spren bonding, but also for the listeners.
Right. And I think that there's something to be said here that their old way of doing things had a specific feel to it. We're going to let the spren choose. And they've learned to harness this captivity or this control from the humans. We can capture one inside a gem and then force it to do what we want.
Right.
It feels very much like, without even wanting it to, the humans have, affected their culture. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's
the next pair. The next paragraph is, it's sort of interesting. She says, this is progress, mm-hmm. Esh and I thought, staring at the little smoky spren inside the stone. Progress is learning to control your world, to put up walls, to stop the storms, choose when to become a mate. Progress was taking nature and putting a box around it.
Right.
What do you think about that?
I like what she's saying, but I think it's wrong. Like, I think that progress in their sense, like, this is exactly what I'm talking about. They're losing who they are.
Right.
What their traditions are to a new way of doing something. And that might not necessarily be a good thing. You know, we don't know yet. Like, it might be a great thing for the listeners, but mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily, calling it progress is not accurate, I don't think. It's just different.
Yeah, it's different. Right. It's not. I was a little uncomfortable with that paragraph.
Yeah, it feels a little bit like the Alethi way or the human way is better, and therefore it's progress to do it this way than it would be another way. I don't know.
Well, it's said in the previous paragraph that they're learning to capture spren
from humans.
That they learn to do it from the humans. Right. So, you know, human observation, I guess, you know, is affecting them.
Right. Of course.
Like putting up walls to stop the storms, it just doesn't, I don't know. There's a lot of things said there that just doesn't quite add up for me in terms of being a listener or what I was starting to understand what it meant to be a listener, at least.
It's a little more complicated, right?
Mm-hmm. This is really cool. It was time to speak with her mother. This is really cool.
Yeah.
Esh and I steps out into Narok and walks along a path. She passed by mostly soldiers. Once there had been hundreds of thousands of listeners scattered across the plains, now a fraction remained. The listeners had been a united people, but they had been a single people, those who had rejected their gods and sought freedom in obscurity. I really think this is so sad. It's just such a really interesting perspective of an entire people, like, running away from their god. Like, most would be maybe on a, you know, pilgrimage or out of necessity, going through great hardship, escaping, you know, war, like somebody's hunting you down. And maybe their gods were, or I don't really know the story.
We don't know. We don't know why.
So I'm fascinated as to why, but I really like thinking about that part of the listeners, that they're running from their gods. However, where they're at right now, they're considering reuniting with their gods in order to end this conflict with the humans.
Right.
Like that's where some of them are now willing to go.
And the other part of this is that the listeners who are alive now are so far removed from the ones who fled their gods so long ago.
It seems
that all
so,
they have is this oral tradition of songs passed down to be able to. So they're like, well, the songs say this. Yeah, but I mean, the songs were so long ago. They don't even, you know, they don't even relate to us anymore. Like, those songs weren't sung about us fighting the Alethi on the Shattered Plains. Like, we're living a different life right now than those people did.
Well, Esh and I comments in the next paragraph. She says, Bila no longer cared about their origins.
Right.
There would be others like her. People who ignored the danger of the gods and focused only on the fight with the humans.
Right. That's what we were talking about earlier.
So it says it right there. So yeah, it's, I really like the way this sort of builds up. But again, this conversation coming up here between her mom, I really like that they did it this way.
Mm-hmm.
Then she saw the dull forms.
Yeah.
They look much like what humans call a parshman. Yeah, this is another observation. We've already sort of been informed about all this so far. But
right. But this gives us a little bit more idea of like what they actually do and what they go through and stuff.
So Delform was a limiting form without the capacities and advantages of newer forms. Mm-hmm. There shouldn't have been any here. Had these people bonded the wrong spren by mistake? It happens sometimes. Esh and I strode up to a group of three, two femalin and one malin. What is this, Esh and I asked. Did you choose this form in error?
Yes.
Or are you new spies? Esh and I attuned to anxiety. They had once tried dull form. She had wanted to know what their spies would suffer. Trying to force concepts through her brain had been like trying to think rationally while in a dream. Did someone ask you to adopt this form? Eshonai confronts these three. Nobody asked it, the Malin said. We did it.
Right.
Why? Eshonai said. Why would you do this? Humans won't kill us when they come, the Malin said. Eshonai gaped to the rhythm of anxiety, strong in her mind. A few fear spren, like long purple worms, dove in and out of the rock nearby. I want to stop here. This is really sad.
Right.
Some of her people, so this shows another perspective, as mm-hmm. you mentioned, like about the theme of this book. You know,
yeah, it's quickly becoming about perspective, right? Yeah.
So this other perspective, just here from these dull forms, Eshonai has her perspective. She's getting, you know, answers and opinions from Thude mm-hmm. and from Venli and from Bila. And now another perspective is up, and that is the, I guess it's a perspective or a lack there. Maybe it's a lack of perspective where hope is gone.
Right.
Like they're electing dull form in order to accept defeat. When the humans come, right. They won't kill us.
Right.
That's so sad.
It is sad. And it's also sort of smart by these dull forms because
it's a survival.
It's survival, yeah.
It's a survival thing. So, I mean, maybe it's not so sad if it's
tactical.
If it's intentional. Yeah, if it's tactical to put yourself in a place of, well, think about this. I mean, do humans understand the forms?
No, I don't even think they know. They don't know anything,
dude. Do the Alethi know the forms? Because if they don't know the forms, you could elect dull form, supplant yourself in your enemy's camp.
Well, dude, that's what she's talking about right here.
Servants.
She says,
right.
She says she wanted to know what their spies would suffer.
Right.
So these Parshendi, these listeners,
yeah,
are right. on purpose taking dull form
dull
and then
form
sending those people out into
right.
the war camps as spies.
Well, makes me think about Shen, right?
Oh, right. Right, because Shen is he's the only Parshman, I say that now, the only
right,
dull form, because that's what all Parshmen are, dull right. form. That's a blanket
right.
statement.
He's the only,
that's fact.
He's the only dull form. He's the only dull form listener in Bridge 4.
Or even that we know of as a character.
Right.
Right.
As we know of as
all
a
the
character,
other ones
yeah.
have been faceless servants, so we don't really know them at mm-hmm. all as characters. There
right.
are a couple that are with Shallan in Tavlakov's camp,
yeah.
remember? So
what a wonderful like sleeping giant
right.
element to this game.
Right.
Or not this game, to this series. It's really, I mean, you know, there's so many interesting things about the series, but this is one that's really neat.
Mm-hmm.
And of course I have no idea where it's going.
No, for sure.
But,
and one of the things I want to make sure that we make a distinction of here is that not all Parshendi are dull form spies, right? Most of
Correct.
Them have been subjugated and turned into dull form as servants, right? Or no,
right.
no, that's not true. That's not true. Let's take a step back here.
Okay.
There's a difference between dull form listeners pretending
yep.
to be slave
right.
form. Because slave form's the one
right.
with no spren. Those are the ones that have
Correct.
Been subjugated by humans and are now servants. They're they're slave form.
Right.
Right. They're the ones that would, like Gavilar said, would just literally stand in the woods starving if you didn't feed them, if you didn't bring them to a kitchen and feed them, kind of thing. They're the ones who have to be told what to do. So the difference.
So what does it take to get a slave form out, to break a slave form?
I don't know. That's,
you know what I mean?
That's a whole other question, right? But
yeah,
there is a difference here between a listener pretending to be using dull form to pretend to be a Parshendi, or to pretend to be a Parshman, which is a slave form servant, right? So, I guess the distinction would be the ones that are in Tavlakov's wagon train with Shallan, the ones that are there taking care of like the stuff, those would be slave form.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some throughout the war camps that have been placed by the listeners as spies, and
right,
they've taken
spies,
dull
yeah.
form, which is resembling close enough to slave form to be able to pull it off.
To slave form, right.
Right. They don't have any of the armor on. They look boring. They don't, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. They do what they're told because they're doing it
boring.
On purpose. Yeah. So yeah, it's really, really interesting.
Forms, I like this. Forms could not be commanded. Every person was free to choose for themselves.
Right.
Transformations could be cajoled and requested, but they could not be forced. Their gods had not allowed this freedom, so the listeners would have it, no matter what. These people would choose dull form if they wished. Esh and I could do nothing about it. Not directly.
Really cool, eh?
Really cool. It's so cool. So her hand is healing quickly. Is it her hand or her arm?
Her leg is healing quickly.
It's her leg. Yeah. She was limping.
It's where she got the spear.
Her leg is
Cal's
healing
spear.
Quickly. One of the benefits of Warform, I like this a lot. Warform, a little bit of a healing factor.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
She could almost ignore the damage at this point. And then we get to a city full of empty buildings. Esh and I's mother had chosen a shack on the very edge of the city, almost fully exposed to the storms.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that says something about her mother's personality.
Right.
Mother worked her shale bark rose outside. So a little bit of, I like to think, a little gardening going on outside.
Yep, of course.
She wore work form, which I think is, that's Esh and I's favorite form, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, work form. She would rather work form, yeah.
Right. She had said she didn't want to encourage people to see one form as more valuable than another.
Yeah, that's interesting, eh?
That such stratification could destroy them.
It's really neat, eh?
I really like this because I think that, yeah, I find it very prescient today in terms of a lesson for all of us.
Well, I think it's prescient in the story, too, because Venli is pushing for Stormform, and if Stormform ends up awesome, then everyone's going
to
want it.
Right.
But her
everyone's
mother's thoughts
go
is,
to it.
You don't necessarily, everyone needs to be one form. We can all be this, like, mishmash of different kinds of forms, right?
Yeah.
And that's important in our society.
Totally.
Which, you're right, is important in our society, too. Like.
Right, right. Wise words is the Esh and I's internal voice, the type Esh and I hadn't heard out of her mother in years.
Yeah, so this gets down to it here where, you know, Esh and I and Venli's mom is suffering from some kind of listener dementia or Alzheimer's. You know,
she says here, right, she when she's addressing her, she says, "Child, have you seen your sister? It is her day of first transformation. We need to prepare her."
Right.
"It's attended to, mother," Esh and I says. "How goes the pruning?" I should be finishing soon," mother says. "I need to leave before the people who own this house return."
Right.
You own it, mother." No, it belongs to two others. They were in the house last night and told me I needed to leave. I'll just finish with the shale bark before I go."
Right.
Okay, that's a little creepy.
Right.
So, I don't think she's just out of her mind.
Well, she sounds like she's got dementia or Alzheimer's. Like she might. She's not remembering that this is her home, right? If she likes to shave down shale bark and do this kind of gardening, she might have done that in her younger days and now is thinking she's back in her younger days and this is someone else's home. She even says, "Today is your sister's first transformation day." And we know already that both Venli and Esh and I have had many transformations,
Many transformations.
Yeah, this is...
So she's retreating. She's going back to some, like, a certain...
time in her life,
time in her life that soothes her or suits her at this moment.
It's very weird to think about, but like it's sad, but it's also a little comforting that the listeners have this as well. Something that humans suffer from. At least we don't know if the Rosharian humans suffer from it, but we we readers have this in our world, and it really makes me feel more for Esh and I. That her mom is in this state as well, right?
Is in this state of mind.
Yeah.
Well, she says, "No, her mother was not dead. She was fully alive, but she wasn't fully alive either."
Right.
So interesting that that's the way she sees it, that you're not dead, but you're not fully alive.
Right, because
that's
the mother she knew is gone, right? This is a different being or something.
But you're still, I mean, alive. I mean, you're still alive.
Yeah, you are.
You're still life.
Right.
So I just find it interesting that the way she puts that. Here, take this, mother, she says to Peace, handing Esh and I a file. Mother says to Peace, at least mother recognized her today. That's sad.
Mm-hmm.
Work on that outcropping there. I don't want to keep growing downward. We need to send it up towards the light.
I think that's
the mother giving a little bit of, I don't know if it's foreshadowing or if it's a little advice, a little bit of wisdom.
Up towards the light.
We need to send it up towards the light.
Yeah, I think that could be
something.
Yeah, that's nice, actually. Like, and her mother, this is the fool, right? This is the fool in King Lear.
Right.
Right.
And there's the wisdom.
Right.
And you don't know where it's going to come from.
She's
so
clearly
when
confused.
I read that line, I thought.
Yeah, but she's also saying some wisdom.
But yet,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I like
right.
that too. So, it's funny though. She says,
"You send it up towards the
you're
light."
You're like, it sounds like she's at least mother recognized her today, and then literally 2 seconds
so
later, she thinks it's Venli. You know,
right.
She says, "You are so good, Venli." So she doesn't recognize her, right?
No. Well, she. Yeah, hang on. Yeah, that's right. The storms are too strong on this side of the city. Storms? Nonsense, mother says. No storms here. I wonder where we'll be taking your sister. She'll need a storm for her transformation. Don't worry about that, mother, Esh and I says. I will care for it. You are so good, Venli. So helpful. Staying home, not running off like your sister. That girl, she's never going where she should be. She is now, Esh and I whispered.
Yeah.
She's trying to be. Mother, Esh and I says, I need help.
Yeah.
I think something terrible is going to happen, and I can't decide if it's less terrible than what is already happening.
It's really funny, eh? Her mom's has this specific state of mind, and she's still going to her for advice.
I know. Our people are crumbling, Esh and I said. We're being weathered away. We moved to Narok and chose a war of attrition that has meant 6 years with steady losses. People are giving up. That's not good, Mother says. But the alternative? Dabbling in things we shouldn't? Things that might bring the eyes of the unmade upon us.
Hmm.
You're not working, Mother said. Don't be like your sister. I wonder which sister she's actually referring to there.
Right. She's telling Venli, don't be like Esh and I, or is she telling Esh and I, don't be like Venli?
Yeah. I wonder.
Yeah.
I wonder.
Think it's the other way. I think she
in
still
that
thinks...
moment, because if it's switching, if her perspective...
is switching back
is
and
switching,
forth.
Yeah.
Yeah,
then
you might not
if
know.
It's
from sentence to sentence, you don't know who she means.
Right.
Yeah.
May not know.
Right.
Yeah.
I want us to just...
linger on
just
something?
To linger a little bit on... But the alternative, dabbling things we shouldn't, things that might bring the eyes
right.
of the unmade in capital.
Right.
The unmade upon us.
Well, the right. Well, I think of unmade in terms of religion, like the terms that I think are in, I think they're popular in some sort of Christian teachings, which is begotten, not made.
Right.
Distinguishing that which is, you know, made by man or some physical entity or that which has been eternal or a god.
Right.
Or, you know, attributable to the metaphysical, I guess.
We have heard this term before. It was an epigraph in the last book, and it talked about Yelignar, the unmade.
The unmade.
Yeah.
Now, is Yelignar considered to be a god?
We don't know. We don't really know. In that little blurb, it had the name Yelignar, which we heard from Nohadon, had killed all of his scribes, had torn through his city
right.
and killed all of his scribes. And he was
right.
named as one of the unmade.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I like that term unmade. It's neat.
Yeah, it's very foreboding.
It's fun to... Yeah, it's mysterious, and it's and of course it begs, you know, one of the eternal questions with humans is, you know, if we think of something that was unmade or eternal, then of course we have to ask, where did it come from?
Right, right. There's a whole series
right.
of things that cascade from it. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So Mother Esh and I says to supplication, why did we leave the dark home? Now that's an old song, Esh and I.
See, now she recognizes her again, right? Now she's like Esh and I.
Right. And she says Esh and I, yeah,
yeah.
exactly. A dark song, not for a child like you, but she sees her as a child.
Right.
She says child.
Right.
Unless it's a term of endearment. She might be seeing Eshenai as a little girl right here, but she might not.
She might see her as the adult, but still thinking she's a child.
Mm-hmm.
Like any parent
why
sees their
not,
child.
It's not even your first day. Oh, no, she is seeing her like a child because the next sentence is why it's not even your day of first transformation.
Right. So she sees her as a little kid.
I'm old and... yeah, exactly. I'm old enough, mother, please. Long are the days since we knew the dark home, mother sang, to one of the rhythms of remembrance.
Right.
The last legion, that was our name then. Warriors who had been set to fight in the farthest plains. This place that had once been a nation and was now rubble. Dead was the freedom of most people. The forms unknown were forced upon us. Forms of power, yes, but also forms of obedience. The gods commanded, and we did obey, always. Always.
Mm.
Except for that day, Eshenai says. The day of the storm, when the last legion fled, mother continued to sing. Difficult was the path chosen. Warriors were touched by the gods. Our only choice to seek dullness of mind, a crippling that brought freedom.
Hmm. So they're literally like telling us here how things went about, right? We lived in the dark home, last legion, that was our name, right? They decided to leave. Their people, the listeners, forms were forced upon them.
Right.
Right. Forms of power, but forms of obedience.
Yeah, dead was the freedom of most people.
Right. And remember earlier she said that transformation could be cajoled and requested, but they would never be forced because their gods had not allowed freedom, and now the listeners would have freedom to choose.
They would have it now. Yeah. So they're fighting for it. Although, get this, they're fighting for it, but some are willing to consider letting it go again.
Right. Right. That's the thing, right?
So that's
the confusing part about this whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
I like that. Except for that day, Eshenai. I like this a lot. I really... Oh, man. I want to see this visually interpreted so badly.
And then...
Well, I've got my internal mind.
But and then the mother sings
mother's
here,
calm,
right?
Yeah.
She starts to sing a nice song, and the song is...
Danced with the Wind.
Right. It's really nice, right? Yeah.
Sonorous song.
Yeah, she seemed herself again. A parent who had times conflicted with Eshenai, but a parent who Eshenai always respected. I really like this here. She says, daring was the challenge made when the last legion abandoned thought and power in exchange for freedom. They risked forgetting all. And so songs they composed. So it sounds like they decided to leave their gods because they were afraid of these forms of power and this obedience, right? They wanted freedom. So they left.
Mm-hmm.
But in leaving, they might forget who they are and forget what had happened then. So they wrote songs that they could sing to each other to pass this knowledge down, right? They risked forgetting all, and so songs they composed, 100 stories to tell, to remember. I tell them to you, and you will tell them to your children until the forms are again discovered. It's interesting.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting that that the songs couldn't tell about the forms.
Well, they do. Our only choice was to seek dullness of mind. So they all decided to become dull
To become dull.
But by being dull, they might forget how to become nimble and how to become war and how to become mate.
Well, and I suppose in the dull form, am I to assume that meant like that was the cutoff from the gods?
I guess. Yeah, because there's a part here. I think they say something here. From there, mother launched into another of the early songs about how the people would make their home in the ruins of an abandoned kingdom, how they would spread out and act as simple tribes and refugees. It was their plan to remain hidden or at least ignored. So by becoming dull form, they could be ignored by everybody else.
By their
gods. Like they
gods.
Were no threat, they were no nothing by the gods. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, but those songs in the songs had the ways to be able to reclaim these forms eventually, right?
Right.
Without the influence of the gods.
The last legion, The last Legion hadn't known how to transform into anything other than dull form and mate form.
Yeah.
At least not without the help of the gods.
Right.
How had they known the other forms were possible? Had these facts originally been recorded in the songs and then lost over the years as words changed here and there?
It's interesting, eh?
I know. Esh and I listened, and though her mother's voice did help her attune peace again, she found herself deeply troubled anyway. She had come here for answers once that would have worked, but no longer. Esh and I stood to leave her mother singing. I found some of your things, mother said. When cleaning today, you should take them. They clutter the home, and I will be moving out soon. Esh and I hummed a morning to herself, but went to see just what her mother had discovered.
Mm-hmm.
Another pile of rocks in which she saw child's playthings, strips of cloth she imagined were clothing. Esh and I found a small sack in front of the building. She opened it to find paper. Paper from the local plants, not human paper. Rough paper with varied color. Textured and full, not neat and sterile. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
My maps, she thought, from those early days. Without meaning to, she attuned remembrance. Days spent hiking across the wilderness. I really like this because this is Esh and I.
Right. We're getting a good picture of who she was.
Right.
Before this uniform, before this war form.
Natanatan passing through forests and jungles, drawing her over maps and expanding the world. I love this.
Yeah, me too.
Expeditions to find new rivers, new ruins, new spren, new plants, and humans. In a way, this was all her fault. Looking through her old maps, Esh and I found a powerful longing within her. Once she'd seen the world as something fresh and exciting, new like a blossoming forest after a storm, she was dying slowly, as surely as her people were. This is really sad.
Yeah, it's pretty sad.
What I love is that her mother knows it's her,
right?
Because she knows these maps
belong to her. I really like this weird thing happening here between mother and daughter, where, you know, she shows up. She goes to see her mom because she needs advice from her mom, but knows that her mom is, like, lacking in some areas, right? Yeah, she's a little compromised, right? But she still goes to her for stuff, and then she second-guesses her mom by saying, oh, my stuff, what was it, just a pile of rocks that she saw as toys, or, like, strips of clothes that she imagined being, like, a strips of cloth, thinking that was my... So she's second-guessing own mother's capabilities, and her mom's like, no, I actually found your stuff, it's your maps, you know, like...
I was thinking that was actually based on past experiences.
Probably,
so that when she's gone out to her mom before, her mom might be like, oh, here's some things, Esh and I, or Venli. And then it was like, oh, yeah, she's going to pass me another couple of rocks and say that it's, you know, this, or she's going to pass me some cloth and say it's clothing.
Right.
Like, she, you know, but this time.
Yeah. There was stuff.
She gives her the maps.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that too. I like that read on it, that this could have happened between these two women before. And so Esh and I has a basis for expecting it to be rocks and cloth instead of anything important.
Yeah, she's expecting it to be just mom being out of her mind. But this time, no.
But yeah, you're right. I really love this part with the maps and her remembering who she was before. It gives us more depth into this character.
I think I want to be the map. Like, I'm the map. I'm the map. I'm the map.
Great. I'm backpack. What's up? What's up, back?
Your map. Backpack. Oh my God. That's funny.
Yeah.
let's travel around the world. You be the backpack. And
Be the map. River, forest, mountains.
No swiping. She packed up the maps and left her mother's house, walking toward the center of town. Esh and I attuned to peace. She did not hasten her pace. So she's going to this meeting of the five, but yet she doesn't quicken.
Right.
She let the steady, sweeping beats of the rhythm of peace carry her forward. I really like that.
Yeah. I really like this next part here where she starts talking about Gavilar again, because
every
time we get a little bit more from Esh and I, we get a little bit more about why they killed him. And that's a really important part. Dude, I'm going to say it. I said 1,000 times, the specter of Gavilar hangs over the series,
Hangs over the series.
It's one point in time changes all this stuff.
It's completely unresolved.
If you want to talk about a ripple in the water, his death is the pebble dropping in the water.
Oh, yeah.
And then everything outwards, you know, like...
Yeah. Yeah. No,
I like this part when it says, the listeners had made a decision centuries ago, a decision that set them back to primitive levels. We just kind of learned that. Choosing to murder Gavilar Colin had been an act to affirm that decision of their ancestors. Esh and I had not been one of their leaders, but they had listened to her counsel and given her the right to vote among them.
Right.
The choice, horrible though it seemed, had been one of courage. They'd hoped that a long war would bore the Alethi. This is what we were talking about before.
Yeah, it would bore them, but the greed.
Yeah,
the
greed, the gemstones had changed, the gem hearts had changed everything.
Yeah.
Because the Parshendi need it to make food. We already know that. They need it for food. Mm-hmm. And the Alethi need it for wealth.
Yeah, the Alethi want it for wealth.
Right.
Yeah,
because with it they can wage war, because they can use soulcasters to make food and make bridges, to make walls, to make everything. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So she keeps traveling towards this meeting with the five. She comes to the center of town near a pool, and there's a tower.
Right.
Centuries worth of storms in terms of defiance, as it's proudly. I love that. I love also the symbol, or the, I guess the symbolism of that, you know, the idea of the stick in the mud.
Right. The tower that will weather the storm.
Yeah. But again, I always think of the lesson of, you know, the bamboo. The bamboo that survives the storm is the one that bends, right?
Right.
So she makes it up to the top of the tower with ease. She finds the other members of the five waiting for her, one member wearing each known form.
Right.
That's really cool. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Esh and I was wearing war form, Davim work form, Abernai for mate form, Shivi for nimble form, and the quiet Zon for dull form. Mm-hmm. Venli was waiting there as well with her once mate, though he was flushed from the difficult climb. I think that's funny. Nimble form was not good for endurance. That's a curious little
yeah, it's
little
funny.
Thing. So Esh and I steps up to the top of this the tower, this flat, and the wind is blowing hard from the east. Davim hums to annoyance, appears to be irritated that she's a bit late.
Right.
She sits on the rock and took the Sprenfield gemstone from her pocket, setting it on the ground in front of her. I'm worried about this test, Esh and I says. I do not think we should allow it to proceed. What? Venli says to anxiety. Sister, don't be ridiculous. Our people need this. Davim leans forward. If this works, it will be an amazing advance. The first of the forms of ancient power rediscovered. Yeah, but those forms are tied to the gods, right. Esh and I says. What if in choosing this form we invite them to return? Venli is irritated. In the old days, all forms came from the gods. We have found that nimble form does not harm us. Why would storm form? It is different, Esh and I says. Sing the song. Hum it to yourself. Its coming brings the gods their night. The ancient powers are dangerous.
Okay, so stop there for a second. Venli makes a good argument here. We discovered nimble form recently, and nothing happened. Nothing
right.
bad happened.
Nothing
so we
happened,
have a.
So why would we?
Yeah, we have a precedent for this, right?
Yeah, precedent set.
And then Esh and I is actually quoting a song here. The quote is, "Its coming brings the gods their night." So it's really neat that she like hums or sings a part of the song in the middle of this argument. Like you wouldn't be having a disagreement with someone normally and then sing them, you know, but hey, listen, you know, like you can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, like you wouldn't do that. You know what I mean? You wouldn't literally sing to someone in the middle of an argument.
You get what you need.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Abernai says men have them.
Right, the ancient powers they're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really, really interesting part
men
here.
Men have them. Abernai says he was wearing mate form. He was lush and plump.
Right.
Though he controlled its passions. Yeah, Esh and I had never envied his position, it says here. That's fun.
Yeah.
Esh and I says, you yourself brought us the report, Esh and I. Abernai continued. You saw a warrior among the Alethi. using ancient powers. And many others confirmed it to us. Surge binders have returned to men. The Spren again betray us. That's so cool.
That's very cool.
Their perspective on that. They're blame it on the Spren.
Yeah. That's the second episode in a row that we've quoted Milli Vanilli's Blame It on the Rain. Just saying.
We did?
Yeah, I think we did it last episode too.
Really?
Yeah, Milli Vanilli really. Remember.
It's a Milli Vanilli really. If surge binders are back, Davim says, to consideration, then it might indicate that the gods are returning anyway. If so, we'd best be prepared to deal with them. Forms of power will help with that. We don't know they will come,
right.
Eshenai says to resolve. We don't know any of this. Who knows if men have surge bindings? It might be one of the honor blades. We left one in Alfkar that night.
There we go. So, they're saying that Cal either has surge binding brought to him again, or brought to him by the Spren.
Brought to him by the Spren.
Or he's using one of the honor blades. Which we know from the last time we spent time with Eshenai that an honor blade is different than a shard blade. It's not a nickname for a shard blade. These are completely different weapons. And it seems like they left one in Alethkar that night.
Now, that night refers to the night that Gavilar was assassinated.
There's only one that night, I would think, right? Like,
now, why did they leave one?
We don't know. We do not know.
Is it the kind of thing that only it's not a threat to leave amongst your quote-unquote enemy because only someone very honorable or good could possibly wield it?
So
it's like a plant you leave. So it's like we assassinate your
king.
Your king. We've done this awful thing, which we admit. Then the greed war starts and the revenge war starts, which they understand. But they've planted this seed in order to bring hope or resolve to the situation? Like, is that...
I don't know. We don't know. The only time we know about Honor Blades so far is...
They've left it there consciously.
Right. The only thing we know about Honor Blades so far is what...
we left one...
Sorry, go ahead.
They might have left it by mistake. It could have been an accident.
Right, it could be.
That's true.
It could be.
Yeah.
The thing that I want us to really, really, like, hammer home here, just... And I don't want to, like... Mm-hmm.
How different shard blades are.
Yeah, I don't want to like force you to come to a realization, but I do want you to understand that what Kaladin can do is either because he's bonded by a Spren or he's using an honor blade, and we know which one that is as a reader. They do not. So that means that if he wasn't bonded by a Spren, he could have done what they saw him do with the use of an honor blade.
Right.
Because to them, they're both the same. Either he's using an honor blade or he's got surge binding. We're not sure which one it is.
Right.
And they're afraid that if it's surge binding, that means, well, the humans have the powers that we're telling ourselves not to go for. We're afraid.
Right.
Eshenai's saying, we should be afraid to go for these new forms, these new powers. These ancient powers are bad news. Well, the humans have them. We saw a guy.
And they're blaming the Spren for betraying them consciously.
Right.
By allowing the return of these powers.
To humans, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Really, really interesting. A little complicated, a little convoluted
it's
here.
It's a little complicated.
Yeah, but it's really interesting to think about.
Shivi hummed a skepticism. We are fading as a people. I passed some today who had taken dull form, and not to remember our past. They did so because they were worried that men would kill them otherwise.
Right.
They prepare themselves to become slaves. I saw them too, Davin says to resolve. We must do something, Eshenai. Your soldiers are losing this war, beat by beat. Venli says, the next storm. I can test this at the next storm.
Right.
Davim says, we must be unified in this decision. I will accept nothing else. Eshenai, do you insist on objecting? Will we need to spend hours here making this decision? Eshenai takes a deep breath, coming to a decision that had been working its way through the back of her mind, the decision of an explorer. She glanced at the sack of maps she'd set on the floor beside her. I will agree to this test.
Right.
Nearby, Venli hummed to appreciation. However, Eshenai speaks up to resolve, I must be the one who tries the new form first. What? Sister, no, it is my right. You are too valuable. You know too much about the forms, and much of your research is held only in your head. I am simply a soldier. I can be spared if this goes wrong. You are a shard bearer, Davim says. Our last. Thud has trained with my blade and plate. I will leave both with him, just in case. This is a good suggestion, Abernai says. Eshenai has both strength and experience. Venli says, but it was my discovery. This shows her personality.
Right.
My.
Mine.
Own it.
Yeah.
Mine. Yeah, I know. And I think...
Venli's pretty pissed right now. She's... But the other people
in
the council...
It was my discovery. Mm-hmm. My discovery.
Yeah.
Remember she had the red... hair too, the red.
Oh yeah, that's right. She did. Yeah, you were like, yeah, there's red here. Though Eshenai is wearing a red uniform.
Correct.
So red doesn't always necessarily mean everything.
No.
But I like here where what Abernai says. It's more than it's a Davim says, and we're appreciating you for it because it's your discovery. But Eshenai is right. You and your scholars are too important. But then Abernai says you are too close to the project, Venli. The way you speak makes that clear. I like this. I like that
you're too close.
Yeah, these people are like, they're not stupid. They understand. If Eshenai enters the storms and discovers that something is off about this form, she can halt the experiment and return to us.
Right.
But like, Venli has invested so much into this that she might even be willing to let it go bad if just to prove a point or something. Do you know what I mean? She's too close to it. Whereas Eshenai is going to go in there kind of like detached from it. And if it looks bad, she's going to abandon it. Right.
Right.
Yeah, so it's cool.
This is a good compromise, Shivy says.
Mm-hmm.
Are we in agreement? I believe so, Abernai says, turning towards Zuln. I like this. Yeah. Dullforms rarely spoke. Hers was as noble a sacrifice as Abernai, holding to mate form. More so, Dullform was a difficult form to suffer, one that only a few ever experienced for longer than a storm pause or so. And Zuln says, I agree to this.
Mm-hmm.
Only Venli did not join in the song as the others hummed in appreciation. So yeah, she's pouting.
Yeah. I like this part here when she's like, wait a minute, if this works and I'm storm form, will there now be six? Because like, will it not be the five anymore? Will it be the six? Because there'll be six different forms.
I think that was
forms?
The agreement, right?
Yeah.
That was the agreement to add on.
It's like if this storm turned out to be real, would they add another person to the five? At first, the five all had been dull forms, and then all work forms. It was only after they discovered nimble form that it had been decided that they should each have one form, which makes a lot of sense, right? And then she's like, a question for later then. So right now, there are five people on this decision-making council, but it could end up being six if, if Eshenai becomes storm form and successful, and she becomes storm form, then they'll need another war form in there to be part of the council. So it'll be the six instead of the five, which is really interesting.
A question for later, right?
Yeah.
The others of the five stood up and then began to make their way down the long flight of steps spiraling around the tower. Wind blew from the east, and Eshenai turned toward it, looking out over the broken plains toward the origin of storms.
Who else would do that?
Kaladin.
Dalinar.
Well, Dalinar
is always looking at to the origin, right?
Yeah, well... Kaladin just tends to, take baths out in high storms. You know how it goes.
Yeah. He's just taking a shower with all of his buddies.
Yeah. He's like, I'm good. High storm.
You know, it's funny. I've always actually just wanted to take showers with all you guys, like all my friends. Like, hey, does anybody want to... It's raining a little bit outside. Do you guys want to...
Do you want to go shower?
I got a couple of bars of soap. We could...
I'm surprisingly comfortable with it.
I have a spot on my back I can never...
quite reach. Stretch. During a coming high storm, wind blew from the east. Eshenai looks toward the origin of storms. During a coming high storm, she would step into the winds and become something new, something powerful.
Right.
Something that would change the destiny of the listeners and perhaps the humans forever.
Right.
I nearly had cause to hate you, sister, Vanley says, to reprimand. I did not forbid this test, Eshenai says. Yeah, instead you take its glory. If there is glory to be had, it will be yours for discovering the form. That should not be a consideration. Only for future. Only our future should matter.
Right.
Venli hums to irritation. They called you wise, experienced. It makes one wonder if they've forgotten who you were. That you went off recklessly into the wilds, ignoring your people, while I stayed home and memorized songs. When did everyone start believing you were the responsible one? It's this cursed uniform, Eshenai thought. Why didn't you tell us what you were researching? You let me believe your studies were to find art form and meditation form. Instead, you were looking for one of the forms of the ancient powers. Does that matter? Yes, it makes all the difference, Venli. I love you, but your ambition frightens me. You don't trust me, Venli says, to betrayal. Betrayal.
Right.
That was a song rarely sung. It stung enough to make Eshenai wince.
Right.
We'll see what this form does, Eshenai says, picking up her maps and the gemstone with the trap spren. Then we will talk further. I just want to be careful. You want to do it yourself, Venli said to irritation. You always want to be first. But enough, it is done. Come with me. I will need to train you in the proper mindset to help the work form. Then we will pick a high storm for the transformation.
Right.
Eshenai nodded. She would go through this training. In the meantime, she would consider perhaps there was another way. If she could get the Alethi to listen to her, find Dalinar Colan, sue for peace, perhaps then this would not be needed.
So,
end of part one.
Let me ask you something here.
That's the end of the interlude.
Let me ask you something here.
Amazing.
It's pretty great, right? It's awesome. I love the fact
what's
that we get to know.
What's going on between these two?
Yeah.
It's so cool.
And just we get to know the enemy, right? We get to know Cal's enemy and Dalinar's enemy. I love it. It's great. I would suggest that maybe the enemy within is more dangerous than the enemy without. Like, we still have to worry about Sadeus.
Clearly, the listeners are not their enemies.
Right, like, but they are, though. The greed is
chosen enemy, I guess, by greed, but that's, you know, the same as saying...
And by assassination. The Alethi have a reason to go to war. They really do. It's just there's a lot more going on than the surface reasons, right? There's way more underneath.
I guess they have a reason, but again, like, someone assassinates your leader, then you go to war. How did that work out in World War One?
Right, right.
You know, a leader is assassinated, you go to war.
Right.
And is that really why you're going? And that's the whole thing. You're not going to honor Gavilar necessarily. Maybe initially you were, but it's pretty clear what's happening. You've just got all these you know, princedoms, you know, battling it out for greed.
Right.
And for pomp and circumstance and power. It's so grotesque.
Right.
And meanwhile, of course, thousands of people are dying and suffering.
For sure. I'm in total agreement they shouldn't be warring, but I kind of understand why it all started. Like, it makes sense, right?
It totally makes sense, and it shows the fall, like, I guess, or the weaknesses inherent in both of these peoples, not just the humans, but also the listeners.
Yeah. Well, the listeners have
also these listeners.
The listeners have chosen this war of attrition. They said it in this chapter, in this interlude, right? They knew by getting Zeth to kill Gavilar that they were choosing this outcome. They knew they were going to probably go to war with them. So they weren't ignorant in it. But I have a question for you. Do you think that Eshenai claiming the storm spread for herself?
Right.
Do you think it's more a delay tactic because she still wants to talk to Dalinar? She's like, oh, I'll do it, and we'll choose together when. Because if the five give Venli the choice, Venli will do it right away on the next high storm, right? But now maybe Eshenai can probably maybe delay things a little bit because they've agreed to let her do it. So, because she's at the end there, she's like, you know, if she could just get to the Alethi and talk to Dalinar, then maybe we can do this. Like, maybe this could be over and
maybe
I won't need to actually become Stormform.
It seems to me that Storm... She, okay, She's afraid of Stormform because of the gods.
Right.
She still fears the gods. Mm-hmm. And that's the story that I'm missing in terms of a first-time reader.
Right.
Like, I don't have that information yet. Like, in terms of, you know, what was it about the agreement with the gods that was so terrible?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we did get a little glimpse here. It appears that their people were, like, I guess, subjugated, forced into forms.
Right.
Like, you know, but the details kind of matter with regards to all that.
It does. It does.
And so I think that's what she's fearing. And I think that she's taking it upon herself, like this burden. She's like, look, if there's going to be a risk of something happening where we break that wall between the listeners and our old gods, I think I want to be in the way of that.
Right. Right. She's also sacrificing herself.
Else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Which is also the honorable Kaladin thing. Right. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So she's doing this like amazingly honor. Well, I'm hoping that it's for all the right reasons, right? I mean, it could all be a setup.
Right.
I don't think so. My instinct is not there. It seems that the setup right now is that it's the sister that is going to cause some trouble, but maybe that's the twist. Maybe that's the turn.
Right. We'll see, I guess.
Right?
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, I don't know.
Do you have a highlight for this interlude?
My highlight for the interlude,
You mentioned that you liked the food thing.
I love the food thing. Yeah, the wisdom of the food. You know, it's hard to argue with your mouthful, something to that effect. Yeah, I really like that. But I also just love the interaction with her mother.
Me too.
The mother is struggling. I connected with that just from a, you know, human sort of standpoint. You know, that someone is suffering with this, and it's something that we all probably know someone or. You know, it could be friend or family member.
It's like one of the saddest things that happened to human beings.
It is
dementia and Alzheimer's. It's one of the saddest things.
Is.
And it really makes us be closer to Esh and I because she's dealing with something that we deal with. So it's really great.
Right.
Like as different as their culture is with these rhythms and carapace armor and they're like potentially the void bringers, like they're potentially the monsters of the whole story, but they also deal with the fact that their mother doesn't remember who they are. Like it's really, really well done. Like it really hits home for me.
Me too. It became more intimate and, again, it brought, as a reader, it brings you closer to Esh and closer to the mother.
Right.
And I really like this little triumvirate between Venli and Esh and their mother.
There's definitely
really
some past going on there, which is cool.
Yeah. And I'm so curious about the future of those three characters.
Yeah.
All three of them, actually.
Are you curious about the info dump?
Info dump. Yes,
I'm
of
super
course.
Curious about the info dump.
I'm going to be singing to curiosity over here.
Great.
Or
that's
sorry,
awesome.
Humming.
Or, to
sorry,
curiosity.
Humming over here to Kira.
It's
I'm
great.
Curious.
It's not a lot. There's not a lot here. She says during. There's a part here that she says. Esh and I pocketed the gemstone. She checked the time. Her meeting with the rest of the five wasn't scheduled until the third movement of the Rhythm of Peace. And she had a good half a movement until then. So it's almost like they tell time by the length of songs.
Yeah.
Right?
It could be.
Yeah. So it wasn't scheduled till the third movement of the Rhythm of Peace, and she still had a good half movement left. So, yeah, it seems like they tell time by these songs. And is someone constantly singing the Rhythm of Peace to be able to tell time? I don't know. It's a little confusing, but I wanted to point it out because it's a little different.
Well, they do have this interconnectedness between them, like hearing each other over, you know, certain distances and whatnot.
Yeah.
So that could be that the humming and the singing is just a constant sort of communicable element to their culture. And so when you're out and about, you could be listening to the song and you know where it is in the song.
Someone
so
could be a mile away still singing it and you can hear it.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, it's 5 o'clock because Jerry is singing Rhythm of Peace and whatever it is. Yeah.
It's at the solo, so I've got a few more minutes. You know, Jerry,
he's coming
Jerry
up on the bridge.
There. Yeah. Hey, Jerry, are you doing two rounds of this? Oh, you did two rounds. Okay, so now I got 4 minutes.
It's like the the listener version of the DJ who puts on a Stairway to Heaven to go take a piss. I'll just put this one on. This lasts for like 17 fucking minutes, so I'm just going to go take a piss.
And you know the crazy mate forms? Yeah. They're the ones that are doing all the remixes. They're just fucking with shit. They're just like, okay, we're gonna bring the house down. We are gonna remix this shit. What remix? Oh, how dare you!
Mate
remix
forms are DJs. They're listener DJs. Yeah. That's
well,
because
they're just
and they always seem like they're on ecstasy, right? Because they're just always making out in alcoves. So that's totally it makes sense. It makes sense.
Maybe alcoves is code for like Ibiza
dance floors.
It's like these like. These massive raves that go on.
Yeah, that's
great. I'm just going to hit the alcove. Oh, yeah, the alcove. Okay.
That's pretty funny. So one of the things they talk about here is they say that there are divisions, conflicts, and even wars between factions within their people. That all their people are one. They're all the same who have all rejected their gods. So they all left.
That's right.
The last legion, they all left. And then over time, little factions amongst them started developing with conflicts, divisions, and even wars. But they are still one people, which is really cool. We get a little bit more info on doll form here. We kind of already went through it about how with the spies and all that stuff. That's really such a really cool idea that there could be people posing as servants in the war camps that are actually spies. I love that so much. I think it's really, really cool.
Yeah, that is really, really neat.
Yeah. And then the last but not least, we got a new Spren today, a Fear Spren. We maybe have had Fear Spren before, but we got a really nice, really weird description, a long purple worm going in and out of the rocks.
Fear Spren?
Yeah, it's really, really cool.
It's cool. Very, very cool.
Yeah. That's the episode, everyone.
Now we're ready to start part two.
Part two, yeah. I feel like part one went by really fast, and these interludes took us forever.
Oh, I love the title. I'm just looking at it now. Wind's Approach.
Ooh, yeah. Who are the POVs here?
Shallan, okay. Kaladin. Adeline and Sadius. I don't know who any of these people are.
No, you don't recognize any of these names. Please don't.
These are big, heavy hitting names. This is great.
Are you Eshenai's mom? You're just completely forgetting everything you've read up until now.
Yeah, just gone. Yeah, I've just gone into dull form, folks.
Well, you know what I'll do is I'll just refer to. I'll send you the link to the show that you recorded, and then you can just listen to that to remember.
There you go.
So yeah, if you want to, if you're out there listening and you want to support the show directly, go to patreon.com/heroesof. We are doing all kinds of stuff on the Patreon page. We do a weekly talk show where we talk about the episode and we get to answer questions from the Discord group. You can join the Discord group by also signing up. There is early access every Sunday before the episodes come out. Go up there on patreon.com/heroesof and sign up. We would love it if you did. If you want to support the show indirectly, please use word of mouth and tell all your friends, all your Stormlight Archive friends, all the people that are online if you like the show, please tell them that you love the show and that they should listen too, because we would love to have more earballs. We're like literally like we're like Axies the collector of earballs. We just collect earballs.
You can hum to the tune of the Storm Pod.
There you go. Yes, perfect. That's awesome. If you want to reach out, you can do so at Heroes of One on Twitter, at the heroesofakathra@gmail.com on email. But the best way to get a hold of us is at the Storm Pod on Instagram. We're always lurking on there, always looking for new fan art. I just love the fan art. Shout out to all of our fan art people. And last but not least, we'd love to be able to give a shout out to new patrons. I can't really quite remember where I left off last when we did this, but I'm just going to go through a short list here. Many thanks to Salvat Snicket and Brandon Comer, P. Flume, Brendan R., Christopher Jack, and Joey William. Guys, everyone, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for supporting the show. For all of our existing patrons, thank you very much. We, we do all of this for your earballs specifically, and we thank you so much. We love you very much. Thanks for listening, and till next time.
Take care, everybody.
The Storm Pod is brought to you by Heroes Of. Music and theme song by Jack Forrest Productions. Additional music by Jason Moray. Produced by our wonderful Patreon team and the Heroes of Akathra.